Log Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Soul Tree Radio and the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, and as always, it's good being in the house with you. Soul Tree Radio and the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASN Newsroom and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, who, what, when, where, why, and how, right here, right now, at www.basnnewsroom.com. AllOneFrase.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be, as they are working their way toward the board. And as always, hoping that you all are enjoying the early part of the new year and what it brings. As always, it is time for us to take time to dip in to the night's menu, which is in large part supplied by my brother, Gary Norris Gray, who did a wonderful piece on the Field General and the fact that we started out with 14 black men and the center at the beginning of the season. My man Reggie is also with us as well. General Reggie, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I got you. All right. Well, before we get into that, let's get into that.
Six medals for six heroes. They follow Scorpio's commands to the throat, lust, thirst, and blood.
Coming to you live from Mount Scorpio, the Joint Chiefs of Pass, as we have General Howe, General Gray, General McLean, are you there?
Yes, sir.
We have a quorum, and it is time for us to pass on some field promotions to two of the field generals. Now, we have always been able to discern shit from shinola, but perception is something that BASN has always been nailing since its inception in 1999. What I mean by this is that I am talking about the efforts of one C.J. Stroud, Mr. Coleridge J. Stroud, who kicked the Browns in the ass 45-14 in the first round of the AFC playoffs. Now, what I'm annoyed about is, of course, the perception. When he was interviewed after, he talked about how his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, helped him in whatever way toward the victory. Now, this I don't have a problem with. What I do have a problem with is the fact that when Tim Tebow did it, when he was screaming and tuning.
Oh, don't get me started. Michael.
I know, but all of a sudden, oh, what a godly young man he is. But yep. CJ Stroud does it. We got a problem with this black man. Can anybody here testify to this?
Well, I'll go one more with you with Kurt Warner.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they even make, remember, they made a movie about Kurt Warner.
Yep, sure did.
They sure did. That's right, Tony. The bottom line is CJ.
Michael, again, it's who is going to score it, see? It's CJ Stroud, white, he'd be dancing in the streets.
We know that. We know that. And the whole issue is, look, the NFL is a lot blacker than a lot of folks care to admit. You know?
Yeah, buddy.
As your piece pointed out, 14 black men started under center at the beginning of the season. That's almost half the league in terms of starting quarterbacks. Now, they damn sure didn't want to hear that. You take that into consideration when you look at who's not here. In the playoffs, C.J. Stroud is here. The Houston Texans beat the Cleveland Browns, and they've got a date with the Baltimore Ravens because they were a 7th seed. Well, maybe not a 7th seed, but I think a 4 or 5 seed. Sorry. Although they were 4 because they won the South. They were 4 seed. The bottom line is that when the mic was in Stroud's hands, he thanked God for whatever it was given to him in the victory. And, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that. But I saw part of the interview, and the interviewer was more turned off by the fact that he was talking than the questions that she was asking. Am I by myself in this?
Oh, no. No, I could go on about how a lot of the nastiness that goes on with a lot of these media is with a lot of these quote-unquote female reporters, and this is just and it's in news and sports, but that's another subject in and of itself. I mean, again, it goes back to something that you've always said in the sense of the hero just cannot be a black man. You know, they're gonna basically make him out to be a quote-unquote, and this is an old term, a God squatter.
Yeah.
And instead of really, you know, looking at his, you know, short, albeit very successful body of work this year, you know, I think it just speaks to, again, what we've always talked about in the sense the direction of where the field generals are going here, you know, and the thing about it is, There's still more coming.
Yep.
Michael, this is the first time in history. Repeat that again. The first time in history every playoff game has a black leader.
How about that?
Okay. Every one of them. Baltimore with Jackson. You Lucifer sound. Getting it with my own remake with Love and Devil May with Echoes. All four playoffs.
Right, but here's the thing that works my nerve. We also have to give a field promotion to Jordan Love. Now, Green Bay has always been the whitest of locations. And for years, a lot of black players would not go there because of the fact that, well, it was Green Bay. And it wasn't that the cheese made them constipated. It was how they treated black people that made them constipated. But Jordan Love shut everybody up. He got the Packers into the playoffs, and he not only whooped the Dallas Cowboys' ass, he dump trucked them. And Jerry Jones is going to have a big fucking problem because he's going to be giving up the store to get a white quarterback in the draft. And I swear, Dak Prescott has probably played his last game as a Dallas Cowboy. Is that right, Reggie?
Well, they've already, apparently there's a report out that McCarthy is going to be coming back, which I'm kind of surprised, but, you know, we'll see how this all plays out. But I will say this, Mike, I'll say this much, we all know Mike Tomlin has basically been fired 958 times during his tenure in Pittsburgh, but he's still there. Now,
yes.
good, bad, or on Esther, they've had several opportunities to go out and quote-unquote replace Dak, and
right.
Dak's still there. Now,
right.
Maybe this offseason is a little bit different. I'll just say this. I'll believe it when I see it, because Dak's been there for a while now, and Lord knows they've had enough, crushing losses so that you would think, oh, this is it. I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, I do agree with what you're saying to a certain extent, but we'll see.
Mr. Jerry Jones last week, Tony Romo, right?
Yep.
Romo kept messing up year after year after year. And he kept Romo. Why, I don't know, but he got him. Same thing going on with Zach. Now, Zach had his best year ever. It wasn't his fault. I blame the defense. You can't let that happen.
Guy, we know it's the defense. I mean, Green Bay waxed them 48-32. And we have General Fred Whitted, the professor, coming into the fray. I have to say,
Michael, the first half of the season, I watched this very carefully.
Yeah.
The Dallas Cowboy defense was pretty much okay. I don't know what happened. But when they played the 49ers, they got waxed for a boy. People were missing assignments right out the middle. Something is wrong with that defensive coordinator coach.
Well, they got more than waxed, and it wasn't just Dallas. Philly got waxed. They did their own selves in with some horrible players defense. There was some drop-offs of a huge monumental level, but in the midst of that, Jordan Love raised his game up, and I don't want this to be forgotten about because Green Bay came out of nowhere, got the last seed, and then proceeded to whip the Dallas Cowboys on the ass. styles are getting the number two.
Thank God
that
there is a God. There is a God.
Yes,
but guys,
is a God. Here's
but guys, I got a quick question. If I can get a quick,
thing,
I got a quick
thing about the Packers. Here's the thing about the Packers. Very quietly, they were 6-2 in their last 8 games.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people,
yeah,
a lot of people,
at the right time.
You know, this bears asking to me, how much of this 18-week schedule has played into either the momentum or the demomentum of a lot of teams? Now, we see a lot of teams get hot at the right time, but we've also seen some teams that, you know, started at the house of fire and literally, you know, fell down like a ton of bricks. The Eagles are a perfect example of them, and I think that there are other teams. You saw teams like Green Bay, like Pittsburgh, you know, sort of day up and down all year, but they did eventually make the playoffs. But how much of this?
Who dog is that?
I have no idea. But how much of this is the result of this over elongated regular season, or how much of it is just on the teams?
Right.
Well, I personally think that the season is too long.
Oh, it's been too long.
This year really blew that point.
Gary,
the Buffalo Bills.
You think about the size of the season. The season's going to stay long. As a matter of fact, it might go to 18 games. We know the bottom line is the longer the season is, the more money there is because the more games people will have to bet. And apparently, the betting is good. So their greedy asses are not going to turn off the spigot where all the money is pouring out from. What I will say is that we're going to see more of the black-white dichotomy pushed in front of our faces. The little subtle things like C.J. Stroud being chided for his love of God is going to be compared to the Sydney portrayal of Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers. He's in all of a sudden being the hero in the white hat, riding to the rescue, saving the 49ers fan.
Of course. But here's my thing, gentlemen. If you look at the different coaches the 49ers had, Mike Singletary, who said can't deal with him, can't work with him, and they ran him out on the rail. But he instilled a discipline. Harbaugh, yelling and screaming because he couldn't get that call on the end when it came to Kaepernick on the goal line. The one that's real comical is that you have a former Super Bowl coach whose son now has been in about 3 Super Bowls and ain't won one. Choked like a dog with the Atlanta Falcons. He had not one but 2 chances with the Kansas City Chiefs. And, oh, by the way, when he played with 4 quarterbacks sitting on the shelf, the Eagles embarrassed him. But if I could take a quick detour, T-Mac, I need your help with something. Isn't it interesting that the owner of the Colts had an episode 3 months ago?
Come on.
And all of a sudden, the media is starting to come out, but it's just been Lamar Jackson or even that lame-ass quarterback in Dallas, which that's a joke. I call him Dr. Choke and rather than Dr. Zach. It's interesting to me that he had to get hit with Narcon to wake his cracker ass up, and then they just now talking about it. Now, I have to ask the question to the panel, who paid who, when, what, and how from the journalist's point of view, and how in the ham sandwich did they keep this quiet for 3 months, and what you think made it finally come out that they reported it?
Well, first of all, we can start playing the Breaking Bad music, I guess, any minute now. Because he's basically been a real life Breaking Bad character, basically for the last 5 months. Remember, he was pulled off on the side of the road, and he had almost $30,000 worth of drugs in his back seat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He sure did. I can remember.
And he ain't do no drug time? He ain't do no time?
No, I think
his
license or something like that. You know,
gentlemen,
$30,000 worth of drugs. Wow.
I can remember a Jets-Colts game where Ursine was there, and he was already looking disheveled and drugged up. And the game was awful. I mean, it was really a stinker. Something like 6-3 in the fourth quarter. Indy had just turned the ball over. And in the ante area, not where the press is, but where the press would sit down and eat and stuff, he was there by himself. He had a beer in his hand. And he was cussing a blue fucking streak watching the monitors. Ursay has been a loose cannon for a long time. The owners have protected his ass, and now it's going to come out. He had an overdose. The owners know he had an overdose. You know, the fact that he's Narcan to bring him back, he should have OD'd. 20 years ago, he would have OD'd. I got Eric and I got the professor with me as well, and I say this to the panel. How long are they going to let this motherfucker get away with this shit? You know, it's one thing that the brother falls it out, but...
Until they find his lifeless body somewhere in an alley in Indy. It's going to be like old Hollywood, where they're going to basically turn it into a Steven Spielberg production.
Thank you. We're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
In this case,
the other shoe is not going to drop because
that other shoe has been dropped, has been shined up. And pulled back into a puma, basically.
They'll clean him up. I mean, they'll put him in rehab, tuck him away in the Mediterranean somewhere, and you know, tell him he has no say in the matter. So it's just more about the same, right? I mean, what owner is squeaky clean historically in the National Football League? What? Name one. You know, I mean, there was allegations with the DeBartolo York family and organized crime, right? And he got forced out. Louisiana, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? You got Jerry Jones, enough said, right? Yeah. The Ford family's been owning the Lions forever. Let's not go back to the original Ford, you know, the founder of Ford and his family background and what he was involved in and a lot of different things like that. You know, Lamar Hunt, you know, they rave all about the Kansas City Chiefs and their history, but, you know, his family members was associated with the Kennedy assassination, right? And, you know, made some deathbed confession, you know? And the Hunt family still runs, you know what I'm saying, runs the team.
Eric went back to the Kennedy assassination. Damn.
Yeah.
Dallas' original owner, Clint Murchison, remember? Remember, the Kansas City Chiefs used to be the Dallas Texans.
It was a lot of bait and shift.
No,
Al Davis's associations, enough said. Rosenblum, didn't he drown out in the ocean somewhere? I mean, you know, when he was at the Rams, I mean,
right.
I mean, let's just run the list. I mean, Joe Robbie down there in Miami, and then Who's the dude that used to own Blockbuster? Blockbuster's not around no more, right? You know,
Wayne Huizenga.
Huizenga. Jerry Richardson, Carolina. I mean, you know, his racist past. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we can go through every team in the league and its historicals with their ownership groups and find flaws. Irsay's old money, his father owned them. You know, he moved. Art Modell, I mean, was Art Modell squeaky clean, you know, when he, you know, shut them down and, you know, shot all over to Baltimore, you know, overnight. What, you know, Washington, the original owner there was a massive racist, George Halas, not Papa Joe, not George Halas, the Chicago Bears, who told Woody Sterling, I can't help, I can't put no brothers on. You know what I'm saying? It was punked.
Yep.
Wanted to bring the brothers on and was punked by the Washington Marshall, I believe his last name was, you know, to keep him from, you know, running the team. I mean, Cook. What's that dude? He's on the Rams. You know, he used to own the Lakers, too. And he also owned Jack Kent Cook. Yeah, Jack Kent Cook. Very interesting individual. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just run the gamut, you know, in every conference out there and every team in the league. And it's historical. Some got for us to sell, like Schneider. Right? We know how foul Schneider was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this, that, and the other. So there's a lot of unscrupulous-ish going on with NFL ownerships historically, and no one's ever walked the plank, right? So Irsay's not going to walk the plank. They know his picadillos. They know what he's into. You know, they, you know, if he doesn't have a board of governors running his team, posting him up, that's it. They know his vices, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not a surprise to these teams like that. It's kind of like, you know, what you see in the league with the NBA. I mean, what's his name? You know, was it, they wanted him out so long, the Clipper guy, that he made that comment about. Yeah, they couldn't wait to break Sterling off. Then they broke off the other owner just so they can get a higher sales pitch because these guys are not meeting their ownership grids. That's a little bit different, but they covered them for many years. I mean, this guy was redlining people for 30 years under Stern, but they had the same religious background. We won't get into that part, right, about the religious background connection in sports, right? Robert Kraft was getting topped off at a $40 massage spot with happy endings and this, that, and the other, right? And putting in proposition for a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now he's still Mr. Kraft by some Uncle Tom Negro talking head that refer to him as Mr. Kraft. Have you ever heard of these talking head Negroes and Major Jets? They don't call him, they call him Mr. Kraft.
Yeah.
You know, right? I mean, what's new about this?
End of the day, with the Million Dollar Boys Club, what's said here, what's done here, stays here.
A bunch of dimwits. What's Dolan, right? Dolan's now alleged to be hanging out with Harvey Weinstein and, you know, doing some real dastardly deeds. Is that news? And he's got, what, the Rangers? He's got the Knicks? So it's an ongoing saga of the same thing. They get outed. It's almost like the Goodfellas, they're not following orders. They didn't cut enough big of check. So the fellas in their clique leak a little information about them. Call
and that's why you will not see black people in that circle.
Never. You got to take the oath. You got to take the oath to be in that, you know, in that circle. You don't just walk in because you are good enough. You know, I mean, we've seen the same thing with, what's this guy, Whitlock? You know what I mean, Jason Whitlock? You know, he's calling out the mythologies of a certain book. You know, just how it's utter bullshit, right? And now he's easy prey, not Whitlock. You know, I mean, they're going to, you know, body shame on this, that, and the other. But point taken, when you start breaking down what's out there, what people are putting out there as fact, and you see it's utter fiction, farcical, pure mythology, bullish, right? That's the whole world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. They've been putting out nonsense for years, and the shit between Whitlock and Stephen A. Smith's bogus ass came to a boil because Stephen A. Smith tried to imply that he was hooping down at Winston-Salem State. And we know he does not have that kind of background.
Whitlock made a point, right, Mike? He said, how do you average 1.5 points per game when you play one game? Mathematically impossible.
Thank you. That's not fucking hooping. And actually, there was a comedian, Corey Holcomb, who even poured more tea on the thing and said straight up that Stephen A. wasn't shit. He never really played. And instead of being grateful that Big House Gaines took pity on him and kept his scholarship so that he could graduate and move on, he tried to talk about other folks, and he became a foil for trash and black people. And let's be real, Stephen A. Smith is the reason, and one of them anyway, why there is a BASN, because black athletes have been ceremoniously trashed by Stephen A. Smith for no reason at all. I will never forget what he said about Kevin Durant. He said he would destroy him. And
yeah, yeah.
The idea that he said he would destroy him was like, wait a minute. It's not like he threatened his family. It's not like he put a contract down on him. He said, I'm going to piss on your career so much, I'm going to make it my life's business to just distort everything about you and make you poison among your peers. Now,
well, you start choking on your own words, right, Mike? Because when you come out and you say you hate another man, I mean, Jason Whitlock, I mean, come on, man. I mean, Jason Whitlock is to me, such a low-lying fruit. That is like the easiest bash-a-thon you could possibly think about. And talk about his weight, you can tell these other things like that. You know, he can be a human pushpin, and he's cool with that part. But the brother makes points, no matter what, you know. And the thing being is, if you move in these circles, right, amongst family, man, you know, I mean, if Gary Norris Gray, man, I mean, me and him are hanging out, man, and he knocks over my coffee, man, I'm not going to go on a public rant and destroy him for my, you know, for not paying my laundry bill or, you know, it's just certain things that are just, you know, petty and in the house. But watching, you know, brother after brother, whatever their field may be it comedy, be it sports, whatever, though I got another brother in his field, we all know we got fam. We all know people do certain things. But to air it out for hits, to air it out for likes, to air it out, you know, to be recircled, or I broke the internet. You didn't break shit. My internet works fine. You know what I mean? And so all these mythological statements, when you get to the nitty gritty of it, it's black on black crime. You know what I mean? Because
exactly
you're dogging out another brother, and the great majority of those venues are not every black person in America is watching that shit. You get a lot of ethnicities, other people curious, and they love to see certain things.
Of course.
I don't know Steve Harvey. I don't know Jason Hart. I mean, they're out there in their little fields doing what the hell they're doing, and whatever they do, however they portray themselves, that's their business. But to go in on them, dog them out, make it like some kind of charade, and then just for hits, for likes, same thing in sports. You got to go out there and tell another brother, another man in your field, you work with a colleague, and say, I hate him. And other people hate them too, and you're the worst human being, and then get out there and be given one scintilla of credibility afterwards. You just broke every code available.
People don't realize how dangerous words are. You know, we saw Lamar Jackson get trashed in the press from the time he was drafted to the moment where he should pick up his second league MVP. And it still has not stopped. The Baltimore Ravens have the number one seed, and they'll play the same Houston Texans team that upset the Browns. And all I can say is, don't worry about the score. Just listen. Listen to the commentary as they describe Jackson and they describe Stroud. And the words that they use, that is what makes it.
Michael, also, you guys think about the cover, right? And they didn't really be there about that cover out here in California.
Well, of course,
Jackson,
that's what we're
so
talking
black,
about.
He held the ball, and he's going to fight it, right?
Well, we know we can't get away from the color. Let's be real. Patrick Mahomes gets away with a lot because he's light, bright, damn near.
Lamar Jackson
is Michael Vick in terms of his skin shape, his play style, and everything else. We know those things don't change, and the same perception get thrown out there. He can't be smart. He can't be ethereal in terms of how he approaches offensive attacks. He's just a, a great athlete, and if he does anything exceptional, it's cornerbacky. Get the fuck out of here. I mean, I've never heard Coach Trice in all my life. I got Patrick Farrell with me as well. And Patrick, if you ever hear me say the word quarterback, he smack me.
No, no, excuse me. I have what I said to me, smack. She was, that was an individual who, first of all, good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Good evening, everybody.
Just a quick note of background information on Jason Whitlock. I've known around, been around, people have known him for years. What he is projects is what he is.
Correct.
Now, I'll leave it at that. That's no mistake. Anytime the National Black Journalist Organization been one around, that's a sign. Move around long. We had talked about this evening. The people who are in press rooms who don't need to be there.
Yeah.
I told you about one this evening. Today, somebody asked Todd Bowles in a meeting concerning a press conference concerning Saturday game. And what they said to Todd Bowles is this. Anybody see it and ready? They asked Todd, Coach Bowles, you know, Saturday you guys are playing Buccaneers in Detroit. You know, it said on Saturday it's going to be 13 degrees. How do you guys plan on dealing with this?
It's indoors.
We're playing indoors. Now, there's somebody who has a press credential and a playoff game that's going to ask a question to a person at this time of the season and this environment. It goes back to the quarterbacking. We got people in there who don't know what the hell they're talking about. Getting exposure, extending craziness beyond belief. And like I told Mike, I've seen, matter of fact, I was talking about my engineer today, and he heard the same thing. I said, one of the reasons I've been able to ask some good questions and is because of the fact I know when to ask a question. Sometimes just listen, and guys will expose themselves. And believe me, there's a lot of guys in press rooms. I'm going, how the hell do they get paid?
Yep.
I mean,
we're talking
about people that you see on TV or in magazines and various publications that are labeled as renowned professionals. I'm going, what? You watch the whole game and that's what you come up with? Better not say anything. So, you know, you're right. You got people in there who just don't need to be in these situations asking questions. And unfortunately for me, particularly with Arizona men, sometimes, like for Rutgers, I'm the only brother and my other brother, although two brothers in the whole season, in the daggone post-game press conference.
It's called the ink spot.
Yeah, right, you got that right. Which is a shame. So if I ask stupid questions, how's that going to make me look more dumb?
Well, what you have nowadays with the blogosphere, the podcast sphere, and the fact that
that's even worse.
The ownership, they want to promote their sport as much as they can, because what was proven clearly during the pandemic, when there were no games, no one gave a fuck about sports. Straight up, right? Everything was on the drip. It took teams a long time to build the momentum for stands. Why? Why? No media. So the sports knows they are totally linked to publicity, blurbs, breaking news, all the different formats, Twitter, social media, you name it. They need a presence in all those places. They hire professionals to do so. Because if you don't have that, you don't have the publicity. Like, in other words, unless you are a track fan, which I am, you know, I know brothers that ran track and participated at high levels, you know, of track and field, where are you getting your track coverage at? It's not covered on these networks, right?
Nope.
They don't cover that stuff. But it exists. It goes on. They wait for the Olympics
in the trial run-up, but what's happening in between all that kind of stuff like that. When I knew people who were training for all of that and, you know, competing internationally and doing certain things like that, it had more coverage internationally than it has locally. Why? It's not a major media coverage factor. So one thing will never change. They're going to have a zillion people. If they have a zillion bums out there and maybe two true journalists and the rest of that mass, then, but they have a presence online and get a certain number of people or followers or hits or likes, they're going to keep coming. And that's what's happening in this realm.
You're correct about the fact that the idea of mixed voice and exposure has been increased exponentially by the Facebook and the Facebooks and other technology where the entities can perform their own media to create things. Now, speaking of track, I keep up with track basically online because people don't write about it.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a small piece, though, right? The average person who watches these talking heads are not looking at it. That's my point. There's people out there who are liking the Formula One racing, heavily in the Formula One racing.
Oh, please.
That's not
going to
be
in
the
world.
Top of the chart. That's not going to be in the top of the charts on these morning shows or these newscasts or the local news unless someone local showed up. So my point being is, but yet they have a huge following, right? They're Grand Prix. I mean, they have a million. And what they call football in Europe and soccer in the United States, that crushes. Those franchises in Europe are more valued than any sports franchise in the United States.
And if you ask somebody, if you ask somebody,
not even close.
What sport has a large attendance in the country?
Well, the World Cup crushes everything.
No, what I mean, in this country
as an event.
What sport? Yeah, the large attendance of any sport in this country annually is what? Car racing.
College.
I'm not in the horse track racing, right? but let the Kentucky Derby hit, right? The Preakness, they get a national attention. So my point being is these national franchises, these sports franchises, they pale in global numbers to some of the things I mentioned. That's where the myth that they're running shit is true. But one thing is true, though. One thing is true. When it comes to dominating television coverage and television ratings, nothing tops the NFL.
Nothing.
Yeah,
NFL. 98 of 100 top shows in NFL.
Yeah, exactly. It's all NFL. Movie. They average 9.2 million. The NBA is around 700K.
Yeah.
Not even close. So it's 700,000. And these morning shows that these people talk about, I remember this guy was funny, man. One of the show on Fox, he was talking about how these guys are talking about their ratings. He would do a morning side by side rating program with those shows, and then like Magilla Gorilla and shit, I think outrated them like 3 times out of the week on the rating system. And then Get Smart got them on another day. I was laughing my ass off.
Yeah.
And you can trace out. And these people got excited when they got 900,000 viewers on the pale of the global populace and interest in the United States. That's very small.
But
even all the hype
that they had for the whole Peacock game this weekend.
Exactly. What was the number?
Please. Don't want to get me started on that. Talk about
it helped Peacock out, right? Get a 1-day subscription and people pulled and bounced out all the frustration that came with that. But I just think that people need to just really, you know, keep it 100 on this buffoonery of all this love and overrating and hand over fist shit. It's not true. NFL, yeah, they got it locked down. And then the sleeping giant of them all is Major League Baseball. Because Major League Baseball continues. No one's watching. They never talk Major League Baseball on these other shows. They never have like maybe 5-minute blurb on anything from Major League Baseball, right? But Major League Baseball continues, never. You never see anything consistent. Well, the point being is Major League Baseball runs itself, right, because they have 160
games. There you go. They got their own network. They don't need them.
Right? And when you see the amount of people that was at the Texas Rangers outside the stadium when they won the championship, if you believe the hype, you would think nowhere near that number would come out. So they don't really give a damn about those kinds of things. Like, so these people, these talking heads, when they come on and start talking, we're number one and number two, we can check their ratings and F Troop and shit. Or some other TV shows like that may have topped you in that hour of time frame in terms of numbers.
By the way, Larry Storch is one of the most underrated actors in, of all time.
Yeah. I love that.
But guys, the premise of perception stares us in the face. We hear C.J. Stroud, like his brother, works hard, gets Houston into the playoffs, wins his first playoff game, and he struck close to a crackhead owner who had OD and really put his...
Don't get me started on him.
In the worst light.
Mike, if that was a player, he'd be on the newscast every day.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, Patrick, somebody will be saying, get off the weed.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Please. Is it true that Uma Thurman was right next to him too when they
actually T Mac, it was a John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson.
Really? Say what again? Say what again?
Yep.
Please.
And how many more owners up here smoking that, we call it stepping on that glass dick, please. Don't get me started. And that I know, my guess is wrong, but you'll never, please, let me not get on that.
No, that's not our job. We're not here to out people's foibles or, call them out, and dog them out. But real quick blur, because Mike made a point, it's a similar topic. I'm going to bounce out of it real quick. When you mention the power of words, when you have when it comes to a person being ostracized and not liked, nothing new about that. I guess that's why I got so many friends, because those people have been ostracized. If I roll the dice with them and see how they deal with me. You know what I'm saying? And they deal with me on the up and up. And even if they still funny style, but they're consistent funny style, they may not get into the inner sanctum of, my realm and what we could work on. But you're going to be all right on that outskirts, right?
I appreciate the fact that you've kept my potato chip addiction out of the newspaper all these years.
Truly. T-Mac is ride or die, man. We've been doing this for decades plus or more right now. That's ride or die stage right now.
Appreciate it, man.
But I wanted to say something about Mike made a great point about power words because someone said, hey, hater man. I mean, I find it just to be the weakest level known to man, the hate card, right? I mean, I just find that irrepressibly weak. I hate Two-Face. You know what I'm saying? I hate a flat tire in the middle of nowhere. I'll be frank. You know what I mean? But there's always a solution by another human being. One of my favorite lines I've heard is that there's never been a person born that's been wrong all the time. Never.
Well,
never been a person born that's been wrong all the time. Well, I mean,
there may be a few politicians that may push that button, but I'm gonna leave that alone.
Like I said, even if it's 98.7, they still got a 1.3. Right? They still got that 1.3. Even if it's 98.7, right? They still got that 1.3 and shit, right? That may be the dude that sponsors me that car for coffee when I'm a buck short. Don't want to use my ATM. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I got him. You know what I mean? Oh, Mr. President, break me off. I appreciate that. You know what I mean? At least 1.3. But the point being is about the power of words. Now, we've seen it reverse engineered a little bit. When Jordan did his, Jordan just raked Jerry Krause, general manager of the Bulls.
Oh, yes,
over
about
the
his
coals.
Wife.
Yeah.
Over the coals. He destroyed. And so when his wife came to get, some flowers for, he was part of that. He did put it together. Mm-hmm. And she got terminally destroyed based on previous words.
And your boy, and Tony, your boy, Chris Wilson went off on TV because they booed his wife.
Well,
that's not fair for her. But damn.
Yeah.
My point being is, we take it as it comes. We've been booed, cussed. Sinatra got a whole song about this. I've been up, I've been down, I've been over, I've been out. I mean, we've been all dealing with that's right. So we might have had some of those, right? But that was purely like vitriol. That was spread that goes on to a secondary party, which goes to show you the power of words. But see, ultimately, it goes back to the character concept.
Lack thereof.
There it is. And so it speaks to that. And that's why, you know, we talk about these cats getting, you know, hyped up on these jocks and shit, sports athletes. You're like, yo, you might be disappointed when you have a conversation with them. So make sure you just keep it on the sports tip. You may be highly disappointed if you ever met them.
Well, there are some people, I will tell you, in the media that what you see is truly what you get.
Right.
And I'm not, and I leave it at that. And the two entities that were involved, I've never been around Stephen and Aaron Smith. I'm a long time. It's some stuff that Stephen Smith would say. Put it this way. This has been going on for 9 years.
Yeah.
I know folk who know both of them, one more than another. It's been going on for 9 years. And then, like I said, anytime the Black Journalist Organization don't want you to be a part of the organization, that says something.
Not speak for itself. I mean, you can be the grand poobah of the Ku Klux Klan and have brown skin.
Yeah.
I mean, no question.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the point, I take no sides of this. I don't know any of the individuals personally.
Yeah.
I don't wish any of the individuals any kind of vitriol. But at the same time, if you're going to push your agenda of what is right, what is wrong, and, you know, and being on point on certain things, when there's a lot of hot quotes, word for word, said on this show that's come out of an individual's mouth and then using and reverse engineering some of that intel to boost your career as seeing this as the next hot shit that can help you. You know what I mean? I mean, I can break that down thoroughly, and it's known, so they won't touch me on that or even want to go to the challenge line, because I couldn't wait to just rip off, you know, one of them fucking hot global bombshell, you know, articles I could put together. But that's not a threat. It's reality.
Yeah. Some
game knows game, right? And so my point is, I wish the brothers in all their little hustles and what they do, stay the course with it. But when you try to bring it other, or you want to come in here and have me play fanboy or start pumping up what they're about, then I'm going to push back.
That's been a major problem this season. We've had a lot of fanboy crap, fomented by writers who, again, don't know what the hell they're talking about. And they ride shotgun for these guys, protecting spurious people and spurious reputation. Professor, we have Ursay, who went from cracker to just crack. And we also have Daniel Snyder, who is a bad boy with Washington. You know, how the billionaires police themselves in this atmosphere of largesse? And good evening.
They don't write about it. They make sure it's not written about, unless you just can't help it. That's what the ball is down to, really.
Well, I mean, you're not going to want to lose your doggone pass. I mean, these guys will bow down to have their little pass. The first whiff they get that might be in jeopardy, they're not going to do that because, you know, what else are they going to do with their damn lives?
Mike, I just want to let you guys kind of touch on it a little bit. Even though the playoffs are still very much in play, to the least, they've already started the brigade of breaking down plays for the draft.
Right.
I'm going to... Mm-hmm. Let the season get over with. Good God.
Exactly.
Let the young men breathe, you know?
No way.
Because the combine's in 3 weeks, 4 weeks. That's where it starts at, to pump that up. That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
The new portal. The NFL portal is open.
The NFL decided the league is too black for them. And we know they got to have a white hero. And if somehow San Francisco or Detroit does not end up in the Super Bowl, they're going to have an even bigger problem because it's going to be another cold ball.
Mike,
so what are they going to say?
You think they don't want Josh Allen to win the Super Bowl? You kidding?
Yeah, of course they
do. Stop lying to yourself.
Of course they do. He's riding the head of the White Boy Legions as we speak. But they play Kansas City. And don't you think Kansas City will whip that ass again? I mean, you know how to say, well, Mahomes, he's almost white. Let's ride with him. Because they will not ride with Lamar Jackson. You're going to probably hear more vitriol about Jackson for making it to the Super Bowl than any other quarterback. I mean, any other quarterback. I know they tried to piss on Russell Wilson, but this is worse.
And what I like about Lamar more than anything else,
No.
And do you know how much you don't praise him? Like I told you before, one last MC commercial he had, none. It don't even praise
exactly.
It's all set up. It's all set up for Lamar to do the cakewalk. I mean, Houston's going to be, you know, bring it, but, you know, Baltimore will be better. And Kansas City, Buffalo, they're going to wear each other out. There's not going to be enough fuel in the tank for another game at Baltimore. You know, to try to rise up after that. You know, Baltimore had one less playoff game too. They're going to be at home, rested. You know, they'll get past Houston. It'll be an interesting game, but that's going to be an attrition battle because it always is between Buffalo and Kansas City. And if it serves me right, is this Mahomes' first road playoff game? Because I know they had home field.
Yeah, first road.
Okay. Yeah. And even though I told people last week I was concerned about my Browns playing Texans, and I was right.
Flacco!
Well, you know,
when is the last time the Browns got past the first game?
A couple years
Marty
back.
Schottenheimer era?
Marty Schottenheimer, yeah. Well, again, if you can't run, it don't make no difference. If the Ravens were playing Houston, I think the game would be closer than what you think.
That's a fast track down in Houston. I mean, Lamar, I can see him shredding that.
Yeah. And here's what it is. I'm looking to see, for the coaching year, this race between Savansky and D'Amico from the Texans.
D'Amico, right? You mean it? Ain't no reason, man. It'd
be interesting. We'll see who's coaching the year.
Well, the Joe Flacco miss went down the drain fast with those back-to-back picks. So, yeah, they were playing Flacco. I thought it was Namath, Parkinson, Staubach combined. They were pumping up Flacco.
Well, Eric, when they were running the ball, I said, we can't go. No, it doesn't work that way. And then and the mark of every playoff game, one turnover was good. Two, you're done. You do two back-to-back, next game, you know, that's what it was.
I mean, Mike, you asked Fred. Yeah, you asked the professor a question. Could you repeat that that you had for the professor?
Well, look, you got her say, like I said, he went from crack to crack.
Right.
And then you have Daniel Snyder, who just pissed away his opportunity in Washington. You know? Mm-hmm. How do you expect billionaires to discipline themselves when all this chaos is going on?
See, this is why we have shows like the Beverly Hillbillies, just to get a feel for how
what a
night
for TV.
Are.
What a night for TV.
And you know, we see how eloquently. And how much of a loose cannon their poster child and former president. Their whole theme behind these people is the rules don't apply to us. We do
got that right.
Because we
got that right.
And see, and if you remember Ms. Drysdale, you know nobody on earth was as good as she was in. Including the people that had the money, but they were not blue bloods.
Right.
You know, and think about it. The fix is in. We just don't know. We have a narrow down to who the fix is going to favor.
Right.
I didn't get a chance to watch the Steelers get beat Monday because I was doing my 2 hours of service. But I understand that somewhere during the game there was another, shall we call it, a snafu from the referees.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, we've said it here numerous times. You don't fix games with players, you fix games with referees. And you know,
got that right.
My contention is they should take the cameras out. Now, with Mr. Irsay, since he's no longer in Baltimore, I don't get to hate him like I was. You know, and I wish the best with Jackson on Sunday. I hope he don't get hurt. One, I hope he don't get hurt. Two, I hope he don't get screwed. But it's hard to, as a Steeler fan, it's hard to root for him because he still wear that bird on his head. And, you know, we have standards. But you know, I've watched numerous Super Bowl games. I've seen some things that, you know, way back when was a little suspicious. And then some of them were just blatant. But these days, where they have, you know, one of the two Super Bowls where Dallas got beat by the Steelers. There was a couple of questionable calls, and then you wouldn't even bring up the one from 74, I think it was, where the guy from Houston caught the ball on the end zone.
Renfro.
This
is Renfro. Renfro. Number 82. Yeah.
You know, one, they didn't have the kind of technology to do what they really needed to do, but, you know, even as obvious as it was at the time. But, you know, the Irsays of the world, the sad thing with them is about, quote, disciplining them, is
discipline them. That ain't happening.
You do like you did, you know, like they did with the Washington team. We're gonna take your franchise. No, we're gonna buy your franchise from you.
Thank you.
Duh.
I would buy
a protein, especially football, where you know you bought it for $500,000. We're gonna take your team away from you. Well, how are you gonna take it? We're gonna buy it. We're gonna give you $6 million for your franchise that you have made money off of for the last 15 years, and now we're gonna buy it for what, 10 times what you paid for it?
Mm-hmm. Right. So
I mean, that's how they get down.
I hope your banker can dance and smile as well as Mr. Drysdale, because that would be just how.
Well, the buyers are already lined up. So they already.
Oh, please.
So in other words, when you get a little boisterous, you know, about, you know, who's breaking you off, you know, they'll put you in the cool-out tank for a little bit and not protect you. You know, I mean, Tiger found that out, Tiger Woods. He's like, he pushed back on his bosses. Next thing you know, they have videotape stacked up in every hotel, walkway, hallway, and systematically break you down. Marion Jones, you know, when she got courted by the feds, right?
Yeah.
See, they were like, no, hell no. The feds were like, listen, you can play it this way or play it that way. She chose the wrong way. Michael Vick. You know what I'm saying? It was like, he was, hell no. He was pushing back. Feds rolled up on him like, yeah, we got bodies. Now we can associate the bodies to you, or you're going to have to take the hit on the dog shit to humiliate you. It's about the humiliation that they want on the brother. They want the takedown. They want to tear down the imagery of these people. And it happens all the time. Fred made a great point because he said, we play different rules. You got a person, to me, the number one thing that speaks to this country and its mindset, you got a person out there, you know, trial after trial of debauchery, one after another. He can win a primary. He can be the leader. He can be taking off ballots of three different states.
He has already
and still
won
win this
going
motherfucker.
Away.
And still win it.
Mm. Yeah.
It ain't about being right. It's about being
right. Right. See, that's why I'm blown away when we as people.
Back in the 60s, and they kill you. They'll kill you.
Well, King and them brothers figured out a long time ago.
All over the place.
they figured out a long time ago they were not going to appeal to no moral specificity. It doesn't exist. They had to get it on the books. They had to get this shit on the books. They had to get it on the books. They had to get Johnson got to write these laws. And they know there's going to still be violations, but they knew there was no change in the heart. So when we're still doing this appeal to someone's moral justice, you're wasting your fucking time. There is none.
You're going to look. We're talking about looking for moral fiber in a person who has very little fiber and no morals.
Frontal lobes have already been cut off. No sympathy, no empathy, no compassion for shit. You know what I'm saying? So that's not there. So I still hear his brothers, how long, you said somewhere that all men are created equal. Cancel that bullshit. It's not how the game is played here. You got to have your thing tight. And you can win every time if your thing is tight. But if you play within that rule book, you're already going to take your L. So we seen that with Kaepernick real fast. When Talon had the goods. You know, he had the collusion shit. He had it all. But he started starving. You know what I mean? Start trying it out. And they're like, yo, we're going to watch them beg to get back into our stuff. Then we're not going to let them back in. Same thing with Ray Rice. Right? You seen Ray Rice lately? Peak of his career?
Ray Rice has been let back on the Rutgers campus again, so that's a start.
But you know what I mean? I'm talking about the time of being on the field, strapping up.
Not national.
He got wiped out. Kaepernick got wiped out.
I saw him recently in Montclair. That's where he lives.
You know, and he went back begging. He had it all. He had the collusion. He had McNair. He had all on the ropes. They starved him out. He was fake tryouts. Then they cut him a check. Now he can't say shit.
Ironically, guess who was on list for a job this week? Flores.
Yes.
Coach of he's on list. But Mike,
you said Flores.
Yeah, who's somebody?
Not Kyle Flores, because I'm only what I'm thinking about. Okay.
No. Here's a question for Fred and Eric. From the angle, I was on the weather this weekend. I watched at least two black college games. And what's the state of black college basketball, men's teams I'm looking at? I've seen individual players who haven't been. As a matter of fact, one of the top players from Howard's now playing with Missouri. No, playing with Michigan.
I'm going,
what's the play? What's the
I'll let Fred go for that. Fred's up to more up to date than me. Here.
Well, it goes both ways. In my humble opinion, the SWAT in the CIAA and the NEAC have pretty decent individuals, in some cases you got some good coaches who can make some things work via teamwork. The SIAC to me, I'll put it this way. I watched Tuskegee and Kentucky State.
I watched a little bit of that, too.
That was on TV up here.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that.
Although they had a couple of guys that were pretty good. But I've never been too hot on them over the years. And CIAA is trending up mainly because they are doing a pretty decent job of promoting and so forth. I will say this: the thing that irks me with the SIAC is it's the football. It's really literally a football conference. I would not want to see if they want to show a CIAA game. If you want a packed house, go to Winston. Go to a couple of other schools, Virginia State, Union, and granted they have small to medium sized venues, but they look full. Whereas in SIAC, pre Christmas, it looked like COVID. you know, in that facility.
Yeah.
Because you had a team. You had, obviously, the team's parents and friends. And this was before the kids went home from school after exams. And then now that exams are over, I'm interested to see, because this weekend I'll be watching Grambling and Southern. You know, that's one of them games that's almost like football. You could play it in the cow pasture, they're going to have a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is that the Bethune-Cookman and FAMU game was pretty well attended. But some of these teams, you know, it's hard to say. But I think it can be, as we get closer to the tournament, it should be getting better. Because I know now all the students are back.
Well, Fred, the reason I'm asking, because they have a big game here in 3 weeks. Hampton's playing Morgan. Grambling's playing somebody else up here. The game, the tournament sponsored by Michael B. Jordan. So someone wants me to do a piece, but before I do a piece, I want to get a grip on a broader base of how it looks before I do something. So that's why I'm scratching out and asking.
That's a great point. I think, you know, if you do a piece, and you're a pro, you know, you got the skill set, you've been there, done that, you're legit, so all that, you know, need not be over-embellished, but I like saying it anyway. I think if you look at it from a historical standpoint, you know, of the current tense, because so much of the HBCUs, what's the first word used in that concept? Historically.
Mm-hmm.
Historically black colleges. Historically is the power word there. It's not black college university. So the historical thing, if you look at the history of Kentucky State basketball, right, Travis Machine Gun Grant, you know, I think Elmore Smith went there. Machine Gun Grant? I mean, you know what I mean? I think if you were to, like, present, not the topical view, because so many people are going to HBCUs because of the historical. Got it? They're going for the historical.
And the culture.
And the culture. You got that right. So if I was putting a piece together, I would say Kentucky State, I would definitely embellish. Coach McLendon coached there as well, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so.
He did.
I think if you touch historically, like, hey, got a game coming up, and let them know the basis of what these universities represented once they once did, and what these players are playing on the shoulders of these Giants, now they got to be a long thing. But it has to be hit. And that's the thing that the cat, you know, affiliated with something called the Buffaloes was always not one to connect with, was the historical. You know, it was like, started with me. No. You're building off certain things. Yeah, you can keep it going and build your thing, but you got to resist the historicals. And that's what these universities do when they promote these games. I mean, you know, Byron Allen, by creating this network, you know, he's promoting the historical, right? That's the hook. You know, you got generations of people who went to these universities still to this day, right? So I think if that gets embellished, not overdone, I think that gets real relevance to people when they go to the game. They're connecting with a historical thing in the 2024 sense.
There are people who I know
Hang some things out front. I'll call them banners. You know, like,
Eric
mentioned, the four corners that everybody thinks so much of, with Dean Smith and these other white people. That's Coach May all the way.
It was a scoring offense, not a stall offense. You know what I'm saying? Dean Smith just couldn't translate it. He could not translate
Dean
to science.
Smith almost killed college basketball.
Interpreting what it was, 17 to 15 games,
final scores. And the other thing is, you know, Kentucky State, three consecutive NAIA championships. Tennessee State, three consecutive NAIA national championships. And then you might want to drop a dime on them and tell them, you know, hey, the NAIA was popular. And was more popular among blacks than
Let me just build a little fragment in between that, because back to the historicals. If you are the Division One Coach of the Year, right, whatever, whomever you may be, right, whatever that is, you're going to receive through the NC2A the John McLendon Award for Coach of the Year.
Correct.
That's the name of the reward. All right?
Yes,
so
right.
It's still relevant. It's not some aged out stuff. Hey, Kentucky State has a glorious basketball history. One of their histories is they've done this. They've had players go to the NBA. In this modern sense, they're playing this. Then, boom, the other university. And then if it's more in the academics, is that Tuskegee they're playing? Who are they playing? Did I hear Tuskegee? Mm-hmm. Then that's more on, like, the Booker T. Washington tip, right? These brothers are still relevant. Mm-hmm. They're still in the historical.
Yep.
But it started here. And just knowing the nomenclature of the depth of these universities' history and giving these brothers a bridge. See, the thing that people like to talk about, I mean, I mention this all the time. If someone hears some music, R&B, I don't care who, or seven, let's push to the 70s, right? And let's go to, Huff, right? Huff, what's Huff's homeboys from Philadelphia International?
Gamble, I think.
I see their names all the time. This is kind of slim. So Gamble and Huff with Philadelphia International, so if they produce something in the 70s, right, some will call that shit old school. I'm like, old school? You know what I mean? If you haven't heard it, it's still relevant, but it's never old school. It's undated sound. All right, so that's, 50 years ago? Now, the other man or the system never stops pushing George Washington down our throat. Go in your wallet if you got singles. Never stop pushing Lincoln.
Come on,
Franklin. Never stop pushing them.
So
if I mention someone from the 50s and you tell me old school, and then you worship Benny Ben, all about the Benjamins, and that motherfucker was psycho from the 1700s, they never stop pushing their initiative or their agenda or their features. Then why should we punk out when we get an opportunity to represent our historically black colleges and give them no references? Do not reference these brothers in the past. Do not reference these contributions. Do not reference how they build up the city. It should be automatic.
Here's a question. With that in mind, and this is one of the things that I'm looking at, which I discussed with somebody about trying to do a piece as a prelude to the tournament coming next month. What they're looking at in terms of the game is this. They're saying that, yes, some people I know recognize the historical point, like you're saying, but in
there's
terms of the play, but the play on the court is more, both of you laid it out. You're talking about the teams that made the league go. Now the teams are not as strong as they were before. They're talking about individual players they're going to see as opposed to the teams. And I said, I got to ask you about that.
If you get a Harvard degree, now Harvard was, the Ivy League was founded on corruption. I mean, we could write pantheons on that. But if Yale and the Skull and Bones, on and on it goes. Someone who matriculated from, say, a small town in Iowa and graduates from these universities, whatever it may be, they're considered an Ivy Leaguer, which gives them the feedback to all that history. No questions asked. There should never be questions asked on what we do. There should never be questions asked for the reference. And to discard that, always going to be making about today, well, then you're basically going to have a junior varsity article. What attracts people is the historical. You go to Yankee Stadium, they don't say this is the house that Jeter built. All right? The house that Ruth built.
Thank you.
All right, but with us, that was so long ago. Let's talk about 20. That's so effing disrespectful. Because what about the ancestral lineages, which indigenous knowledge systems seek? But yet, here's the other funny thing that always intrigues me. People will follow religion and worship a prophet thousands of years old, but you can't give no love to the predecessors who made these universities stand and why this game is relevant and what they're building off. I mean, that's professional mayhem. I see it all the time, and it doesn't represent. So these players sometimes, they don't even know it. The fucking players don't even know the damn history. But if we're an educator, right, and we're promoting our culture historically, if we're promoting that and we have opportunity
to do that, but we just jump to it and start talking about statistics. You know, Franco, you know, with these crazy names, LaDarvius Murphy, Allahu Akbar, is averaging 6.7 a game. He leads the team in rebounding. Huh? What? That's not going to attract no fan base. You know what I mean? Because no one's watching anyway. But guess what? These universities, and that's what Grambling would do all the time when they would come up to Yankee Stadium in the Whitney M. Young game back in the day. When I would go to those games with HBCU parents and HBCU friends and all that kind of stuff and all that. Right? Yeah, exactly. I loved it. I didn't know who the hell was playing on the field at the age I went.
Yeah.
I just knew it was Grambling. And I just wanted to get my eyes on Eddie Robinson walking the sideline. That was good enough for me.
That's right. That's right.
I just wanted to lay my eyes on Coach Rob walking the sideline with a suit and tie, suit and jacket.
Did you say that Hampton is one of the teams?
Grambling's going to be coming up also. Grambling's playing.
Okay. Who are the teams? Who are the teams playing?
I think it's Hampton, Morgan, Grambling, and I forgot the fourth team. Yeah.
So okay.
I'll give you all four teams. Come on up. Yeah.
I mean, you're teaching people. You're out there. You're talking about how you mentor youth and different things like that. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of fascination people get when I forward any kind of information, because I don't wear the T-shirt. Right? I don't walk around with the TSU T-shirt and all that, whatever. You got to almost pull it out of me because I don't promote it. But those who know, that's how I was taught. That's what I grew up around. You know, these cats weren't about that shit. You know what I mean? They got I grew up around trophies and all that stuff. Dick Barnett coming through the crib, and my friends are like, that's Dick Barnett. I'm like, oh, Uncle Skull. I mean, it didn't move me. It was my world. But what I'm saying is, even in that nature, they wanted to check on, you know, how you doing, what you up to. They didn't want you to hype them up, pump them up. So that was their nature. So it kind of reverse engineered since no one was really promoting it, right? Nowadays, they're more popular in this genre than they were when they actually played.
Here's what happens. I have a young guy. He used to be one of my interns in my program. He's about 6'6". And he's at Cheney State now. He started at Cheney State.
Excellent.
And I had to hip him. I'm glad he went to Cheney State because he was trying to go to some other school going, you might need to go there playing down ancient history and really understand a broader sense of what blackness is besides he and the Hootski in Jersey City, you know. And thank God he went. And the point that even I talked with him briefly over the holidays, again, he's talking about individual players. I said, wait a minute. Give me a scope of what the team is doing. You know, give me a scope of what the team is doing. So, you know, when I put something together, talking about you is one thing, but what is the team doing so I can attach the team to the history? So it's something I'm working on, that's all. And I'm just getting
Well, you know, I mean, when the Cowboys, see, these people, they don't let you forget. When the Cowboys were playing the Packers, with Jordan Love getting clowned out, but when they were playing the Packers this week, they start showing you Lambeau and Lombard and Landry and the ice ball. We tiptoe around this great history. And I tell you what, though, you know, like the Negro League.
Jeff O'Keefe got punked again.
Exactly. Yeah. Be tiptoeing around all of this. You can't do that. I mean, you got to stand and hold firm on your ground and speak to the reality and the facts. If you got the fiber, well, we know everyone ain't built for it, so okay. If you got to tiptoe it and do the modern-day No Juice article, write another fucking puff piece, puff this, puff that, no strength, no wind, no vigor, no energy that we're speaking to here, it's mandatory to me to produce this. So someone came to me and they're like, sharing, and I have shared in general, just, you know, inner circle people, small groups, about some of the historicals in the HBCU realm, all ethnicities, because, you know, I connect with them all. You know, if you come correct, it's how I was taught. Love it. Research. I bought the book. My God, I didn't know this. Where was they? Love it. And then we as brothers and shit, we're going to do this. But we want to tiptoe the tulips and just get caught up in the bands and shit, and, you know.
They'll do that.
And that's why I like that one brother that does the color for ESPN, does the HBCU, Jay Daniel. Jay? I don't know his last name. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the brother does it right. You know, he does it smooth. He keeps it corporate and shit because, you know, he's got bills to pay. But he really embellishes that thing. Our stuff is built on history, not some Johnny Come Lately shit. You know what I mean? And everyone who's producing these Johnny Come Lately articles, you're just doing the whack attack. People, I mean, Aikman, when he took the job at Jackson State, Aikman just had to get on the field. He just wanted to hang out and shit. Like, fuck, Aikman was here. Brazil. You know, he was dealing with all that historical super talent that came through that environment as it was covered in Four Quarters of Salt. You know what I mean? So, you know, anytime you get an opportunity to at least get touch on that, that's going to wake up that Daisy.
Yep.
Because when Michigan plays Ohio State, we got Woody Hayes, Shin Beckler, and whoever the hell else. But when we play nowadays, are we going to deal with, you know, the new coach? They've been 8 months, some interim coach and shit.
Yeah.
We got picking up. But we're not covering that. So I think, again, if you talk to us and you ask the brothers, like, you know, what should be the perspective, you got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because one of the guys who wants to write on it, he's doing a written piece. Mine's going to be visuals. He needed to know some stuff, and I understand what he was looking at. He was looking at from wondering why. I think his piece is going to be wondering why more HBCU schools aren't producing some NBA players. I'm saying it's a different
game. Well, because historically they've always done it, right? Because historically they've always done it. Back to that again, we can't exceed the historical.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you turned me on, firstly, to the Winston-Salem piece, you know, when the Pearl was there. I think they did it right. They did that shit right, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but they didn't talk about the 2021 version. They didn't talk about any social media person associated with any previous team. They went to the core root of how it was built, the championship level, how everyone got there. They picked up interviews when, you know, Uncle Skull, I'm calling it, a.k.a. Dick Barnett, put on that piece, right? You know, that was on NBA TV and this, that, and the other. My father was all up in the video, as Chick Knight would say. You know, when they would put that out there, they were really covering some time frames, and it was done in an unedited level. So major media, Fox, ESPN, major movie, when they do the history on the HBCUs, they pull from the strength of the past. They don't pull from the last 20 years.
No, they do not. No, they do not. I cite the game between Grambling and Portland State as a perfect example. Portland State is located in downtown Portland. The stadium holds maybe 35,000 people. And in attendance in that field stadium, there had to be representation from just about every HBCU school there was. I saw T-shirts representing between Cooper and Morgan State everywhere. And it was like a gorgeous mosaic. We talked about
beautiful.
1,000 points of light. There was 1,000 points of soul in that stadium.
And when
the Grambling's marching band came on halftime, they lost their bunny rabbit blinking mind. I was in the press box. I saw my own eyes. White women covering the men's faces. Don't look. They saw all that pulchritude out there on the display.
They can't help it.
They rocking those horns. They're smoking them booties. And everybody lost their damn mind.
Historically, first Super Bowl. Who was the halftime band?
Really?
The Tigers.
So, again, you know, where is, I mean, the historical angle of the relevance of things that have taken place. And we'll probably see another. I mean, I'm certain there's been some other bands recently. Somebody said, well, the Brothers Show. I know at the Hall of Fame when, who was that, Claude Humphrey went in, and Richard Dent went in, I believe. My man, the Colonel, as we called him back at TSU days, that's my main man, R.D. When that took, the Colonel, R.D., when that took place, I mean, I know the TSU band was on the set. You know, TSU band went to Notre Dame and turned it out. So, in other words, we have these historical pieces in so many multiple places. Other universities can't speak to that. And this is a time frame when, again, you know, if Cam Newton, you know, was under the same auspices, a hypothetical, he's not alone, Bo Jackson, you keep naming them all, They would have all been HBCU players.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every last one of them.
Well,
you know?
It's going to be interesting how it's put together. Yeah.
Even Deion would have been at FAMU.
Yeah, absolutely. FAMU somewhere. I mean, all them brothers. We could keep going.
We could
hang
it out.
Yeah, we could keep going. But when I have not seen, I've seen a thirsty, voracious audience because there's so much sports out there of every generation and every nationality out there. When they hear that, and globally too, because it's a global world nowadays, so these things crescendo across the planet, and there's such an interest in it. I run into people from, say, the Philippines, Negro League archivist supreme.
Yeah.
You know, supreme. I mean, Kat was showing me something from the Negro League, and there was a whole slew of them. And they were fascinating, not even to mention what took place with the brothers who played in Cuba. You know what I mean?
That's a story.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so there's so much of this richness and depth. Anytime a person has an opportunity in mainstream media to at least do a blurb, two sentences, what the fuck? If you got the heart for two sentences, hopefully someone got the heart for at least two sentences of references, put it in a week and send someone on a research mission and a research journey that will enrich them. You know what I mean? About these historicals. That's what I do, and it just grows and grows. And people come back to me. And, I mean, I had a cat one time just bring me a picture on his cell phone in a business environment. Never talked to him, but he has a sports fan. You know, son plays Major Division I. He plays some ball. And he comes to me with his cell phone, puts it in my face. He goes, which one is this your dad? It's a 58 picture of the Tennessee State Squad. Which one's your dad? I got headphones on and shit. I'm like looking up like, give me a minute, bro. You know what I'm saying? But I pointed out, and that's not to reference me or any of that shit like that, because we don't get down like that. It's a universal shared thing. That's how it was taught, to expand the wisdom, to expand the information, to grow upon it. None of these brothers is looking for that. So I'm saying to you, if you ask us that question, like me and Fred, shit, we can keep ripping this for the next 3 hours, but it's important that there's a historical reference because it's called historical black colleges and universities.
And that's one of the things, when I finish it,
that'd be nice. You got the skills.
Individuals.
And while you're doing it, remember, Hanson's coach is a second generation CIAA coach product. His uncle is the winningest coach in the history of Johnson
That's
C.
Great.
Smith.
Beautiful
he
reference.
Played there. His dad actually played somewhere else. But all these guys, three head coaches at the Division I and II level, who came from the same family. His first cousin also had one time coached women's basketball because he got his start as a head coach at Winston-Salem State. And there's all kind of ways to expand that body of information. Just
and teach and let people interpret it the way they want to interpret it. Because last I checked, Columbia University is not documented as a historical white university. Last time I checked, Georgetown is not listed as a historical white university. Last time I checked, Colorado University is not listed as a historical white university. But if you're a historical black university, there's that. And a person asked me one time, a young person, well, you know, why do they call it historical black colleges and university? Now, the average comment, oh, because they've been black forever. No. Here's the reason why. And if you look at, you know, some of your greatest leadership types that come out of there, you know, Morehouse College, they just had MLK Day. I'm a fucking, you know, MLK, you know, I mean, did not come out of, you know, Pittsburgh University. You know what I'm saying? He may have did some studies there. But so all that historical thing is what the Morehouse players and the Morehouse football team plays on. You're called the Morehouse men because those who came before you.
And that's one of the great things that I give a lot of credit. Last year when they did the game, I had another shoot. But this year it won't be that way. I'm pushing, I don't know if they're going to do it. I'm pushing for the entire one of the administrators to buy tickets to all the public school men's basketball teams and girls' basketball teams to go see those four teams play. Because, first of all,
all of them are blinded by going to some schools and going to look at them. And it would be like my boy RJ Cole, who from Jersey City, and my man Dejon Merrill, who's at Cheney State. He was trying to go, you know, to the Stony Brook. I said, man, why don't you check out some black schools, man, to use your talent. And he's at Cheney State now. So these schools need to see, these kids need to see that.
Yeah, I mean, you ever run into Terry DeHare out there?
Oh, yeah,
is he running around there?
I see Terry.
Tell him I said, what's up? Yeah, tell
him.
But you know what I mean? Yeah.
I'll give him his pictures. I said, no, I'll give you your pictures, man.
Yeah. I know he's still running around over there. You know, I don't want to do no more name drops, man, but yeah, what up, Terry? But the whole point being, again, man, is I think it's a great opportunity to participate in that. Again, like I said, you know, you made a great point because, you know, Gary talked about it. When I went to that Whitney M. Young game, all I knew was Grambling Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the roster of who played. I just wanted to see the uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see the band. I wanted to see the competition. I wanted to see the crowd. I wanted to see the energy, you know, and I wanted to get eyes on Coach Robinson. You know, like, you meant Eddie Robinson. I mean, mm-hmm. I knew enough to have that respect for him. And to watch him work it and do it and just know what he meant. I mean, it was like totally representative. I mean, you could put Belichick, Lombardi, Landry combined on that sideline. It didn't mean nothing to what I see when I seen Coach Rob walking that sideline at such an early age, you know?
Yeah.
And so my point being, again, you know, we cover that. But see, again, I watched the Lion. I can't get through 3 hours of football. So it's like to me, I piecemeal these games. But I did see the opening of the Lions Rams, right? And they showed some 89-year-old fans. Oh, he was here for the Lions. You know, they kept flashing him in the state. They don't let you off the history tip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But it's successful.
But it's always their history.
That's my point. And when we get this opportunity, they know. I mean, there's no universe. One of the biggest things, they call it historically, which means that there's some depth there. There's some length
and
success there.
And,
yes.
And quite frankly, Eric, a lot of inner city kids need to see it. I'm
they need to learn. But remember, they love to learn about it because what I have found when you present that to them, that it's just more than a black school. And, you know, if my sister went there for a year and she wanted something more integrated, you know, all those kinds of surface effects. But when you speak to the depth and the, those associated and affiliated, and what it represents and what it means, and not just for that from a holistic standpoint. And you can still get your education degree when it counts. But the point of the matter is, you know, what Fred talks about all the time, we got to tell our own story. So to me, I think anyone who's come to me in various places and they ask about this and they're going to put them together. And let's say, for example, man, let me come with Delaware State versus, North Carolina Central, right? You know, let's just see, that's going to be a game like that. Well, what are they in the current tense? You know, they are what they are. These are the teams. It's their players. They got to get represented. You got to write about them. But they're built on this particular history. Did you know? Well, they always have these things, these games, right? This, did you know? That, who was the first, you know, Iowa Hawkeye to, you know, this is a 1968 stat.
Yeah.
Right, but with us, you know, shit, you know, Malik Robinson, you know, let's talk about him, you know, JC transfer. But what's his history? Whose university is he building on? Like Fred said, well, this coach had this background. He connected with JC Smith. He's done that. All that is depth. That's rich. That's wealth. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Gentlemen,
we
got to close it out. Some great discourse. Unfortunately, time is on our friend. And Reggie, wherever you are, just to ask Patrick, you set it up, please.
There's two guys that you guys, the names of two guys that you need to know. One of the guy, his name is Aaron. Other guy's name is Andrew Irons. Why are they important? Because you see the handwork of their A&A Magnum Company all over the place. But you never know who they are. But you know the entity and who they represent.
Yeah.
Who they represent? Well, you'll see part of it this coming Sunday.
when the Kansas City plays the Bills, what you'll do, you'll see on the field, see some, but I'm not also much in the field. Yeah, you see it on the field, and you also see it in the press box, in the tweets. What you'll see is the empathy that everybody, the popular like of Taylor Swift. You'll see her in doing whatever she does in the box, particularly me want to see that. And you'll see the person she's connected with, Travis Kelce, on the field. But why is this important? Right. What people don't know is that the managers of Travis Kelce are two brothers, Andrew and Aaron. They are behind the whole thing. The history of those two guys have been representing Kelce since he was in University of Cincinnati. That's when they first got him. Everything that you see from commercials, the whole Taylor Swift piece, and the publicity behind it, or these two brothers don't even know what's happening, but they're just raking in money. So I'm glad for them.
So you mean to tell me that this was the first Super Bowl and Fred the Hammer Williamson was out there, Pam Gerby in the booth?
Was Pam? I think I tell him she was with Kareem. It was Kareem.
I'm aware.
But those two brothers are behind Kelce and all promotions, and they stay in the background. And they're bringing in the money. The company's called A&A Management.
Good for them.
Yeah, good. Well, Green Power is where it's at.
Showing up.
It'd be interesting to see what the playoffs present to us as the game's going on. Professor, come on with it.
I don't know if I mentioned this last week. We lost another good member of the Ramilly in Ted Blunt. Passed away last week. He was the first guy to come to Winston-Salem State and coach teams. And boy, you're my point guard. You won't run my team. Do what I tell you. And from there, he won two CIAA championships, and he was a precursor to the 1967 NCAA championship team. He was the one that helped set Earl Monroe on the right track, and he's been a loyal Ram ever to his last breath. For those who don't know, his daughter is one of the congresspersons from the state of Delaware. She was the hard-headed one because she didn't go to an HBCU. I think she went to Rutgers or one of the other schools. But anyway, he's a great loss to the Ramilly, and we will miss him. Also, we're just over roughly 6 weeks away from the CIAA tournament. They're looking to do some big things there this year. It's so cold here that I ain't going out nowhere between now and Monday, so they forget me once the ball game, even though it's indoors. But you know, we had an interesting situation last weekend when Kansas City played Miami. Two players whose names both escaped me, who was number 29 for Kansas City and number 71 for Miami. Just a few years ago, they were teammates at Federal State, and they did a photo op and some other things. But you know, it's not my point is, even though they're the enemy on one hand, they're still family, and we just you can tell kids you can still get to the NBA as well as the NFL from an HBCU.
Well said. You know, we don't say it enough. It's more something of value, something that we work
all the time. HBCU will do just that. Eric, come on with it.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, thank you for, all the Discord. Great, great question, Patrick. I know you're going to, have an incredible opportunity to, really do some, awesome things with your participation in that event. And thanks for enlightening many people listening, including myself, to such events taking place. All right, so this is an article. It won't take me long to, rifle through. But this article is dated January 12, 2024, so pretty recent. And it's from the CT Insider. I'd be more than glad to forward the link to anyone interested, like Mike or whatever, so we can spread it wide and far. But here it goes. The headline is this. Connecticut-based ESPN returns dozen of falsely obtained Emmy Awards. Okay.
I know.
So ESPN, here we go. Here we go, Patrick Farrar. ESPN has returned as many as 37 Emmy Awards and has 37 folks and has apologized to the organization that administers the Sports Emmy Awards for submitting fake names to categories where they were not eligible to win. The Athletic, which broke the story, reported that from at least 2010, Bristol-based ESPN inserted fake names in Emmy entries, then re-engraved the awards won by some of those false individuals to give them to on-air personalities. Some members of our team were clearly wrong in submitting certain names that may go back to 1997 in Emmy categories where they were not eligible for recognition or statuettes, ESPN said in a statement. To further embellish it, I will say the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, which administers the Sports Emmy Awards, discovered the fraud through an investigation which led to ESPN doing its own probe. This was a misguided attempt to recognize on-air individuals who were important members of our production team, ESPN said in a statement. A statement from the Academy said it found several fake credits submitted by ESPN to multiple Sports Emmy competitions. Once ESPN senior management was alerted, the network took steps to take responsibility for the actions of its personnel to investigate thoroughly and to correct the course of action. The Athletic further reported that ESPN personalities like Kirk Herbstreit, Lee Corso, and Desmond Howard on College Game Day were given awards they were not entitled to, according to the Associated Press. There was no evidence, the report said, that any on-air winners knew what happened.
Knew about it.
ESPN College Game Day show was at the center of the scheme, though it is unclear who orchestrated it. From 2008, the show won 8 Emmy Awards for Outstanding Weekly Student Show. But on-air talent was, until 2023, prohibited by NATAS guidelines from being included in a credit list in that category. I'm almost done. The Athletic reported hosts, analysts, and reporters on College Game Day could win individual awards such as Outstanding Host, Studio Analyst, or Emergent One-Air Talent, and they could win for an individual feature. But they were not eligible to take home a trophy or win by the show. The rule was meant to prevent front-facing talent. Uh-oh, talking heads, front-facing talent from winning 2 awards for the same work, which the NATS rulebook called double dipping. I rest my case.
Well, you know what, Eric? I got to say this. BASN turns 25 this year. The vision that was started by Roland Rogers back in 1999.
My brother,
was to objectively put out the virtues and faults of black athletes in a forum where they could get a fair shake. That's all, not even the praise, but just to make sure that the information was correct, was fair. It attracted me and it attracted others. It was through that I got to meet Gary and Tony and Desi and Ron Harper and others. And the bottom line is everything we had to do had to be real. We were challenged at least a dozen times by ESPN and ferreted off each attempt with a laugh. Every time they tried to check us on something, we had them checked and double-checked. I said it several times while I've been here, and I say it now. ESPN is the only company I know that bullshit is used as a recyclable resource. And this is proof of the level of scam, full scam, that they do in order to pump themselves up.
We get legit,
and nobody messes with BASN because we know what the fuck we're talking about. Gary.
Mike, all the things
about
that.
I got a few things.
Yeah.
All the
Martin Luther King's birthday. University of Michigan, Fab Five.
Yeah. Other day.
Chris Webber, Dan Rose, Juwan Howard, Jimmy King, and Ray Jackson were on the court on Martin Luther King's birthday.
That's right. I beat my Buckeyes. I didn't like it at all.
But these five gentlemen got skewered, got ridiculed, abused, misused. I'm glad to see them brought back together again.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope they go forward in life together because brotherhood is very important. I hope they understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the second thing is the Golden State Warriors are mourning the death of assistant Dejon Mankiewicz, who died this morning of a heart attack and postponed the game between the Warriors and Jazz because they had to do a funeral service for the Warriors and since they've been here for 10 years. So I had to go out to the Golden State Warriors and they lose one of their own.
Claire
McCove, 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon.
Gary, first of all, we have to say our shame to the brother. Patrick, you were going to say something.
In regard to the
Emmy Awards.
About those Emmy Awards.
Yeah.
All I got to say is this. Eric, you read it. I knew about it about 10 days ago. Have you seen anything on mainstream TV about it?
Nope.
Case closed. Because if that had been a black show, it would have been on mainstream.
That's literally worthy of having zero credibility in every level of your organization.
Yeah.
Can anything after that be credible? After literally engraving Emmys that were undeserved and presenting them as if they were deserved and then paying people accordingly, does Herb Street get that contract with Prime NFL football, if that's out there, right?
And
he can say, I'm an Emmy winner. All right.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't know it. He didn't know it.
Yeah.
Literally, I found out they did not know it.
Well, there's this old saying I always love. Did not know, yet did.
I've got some people, some folk I know, it's going to be a synthetic. They attacked some, graphics people, some production people got it. Really? I didn't know it. And some people, the reason why they didn't know it, because some of the people got laid off and didn't know it.
Well, when I was a prep coach, coaching in the alleged inner city, right? And a person would, participate in maybe some unholistic tools, right, be it alcohol or something that could be considered something you could smoke. And if it was shared to me that, it'll never happen again, or it was the people I was amongst, this and that, whatever, I did not know code, I would go, the moment, you partook, it became an individual experience.
Yeah.
there's no getting around it. You know, there's no getting around it. Because you could do the research and find out, but you took it, you promoted it, and then it becomes part of your LinkedIn account, right? Emmy winner, yeah. Right? And then you can promote that to get the – and if you financially gained on something that was illegal and not worthy and fake and fraudulent, everything afterward, regardless of that, you're now associated with the fraud. As, you know, when the United States government rolled over to Iraq, right,
yep.
That Schwarzkopf era, if you were
yep.
Saddam's gardener, they were looking for you.
Yep.
If you cut his hair one time, they were looking for you.
Oh, yeah.
If you shined his shoes, they were looking for you. They were.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Anything that aids and abets any kind of situation of fraud or violence, you're guilty, Patrick.
All I got to say, gentlemen, is that, again, BASF is 25 years old this year. You know, the right premise of who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how is alive and well in what we do. We always get our shit right, and if not, we find out who was wrong and why, and we correct it. That doesn't seem like such a big formula for success, but it is. We're still here, and we're still here because we know the truth is out there, and we know our point of being true for all the years that we've been here. From Shade of Roland Rogers, to Gary, to Tony, to all the writers who have written for BASN, and you got to always remember, what they say is true. There's them that don't know who say, and there's them who say and don't know. We know.
Vera, you know we tally up at 4 o'clock. What is your problem?
Kiss my ass, sugar. I've got to watch my girls until the last trick is gone, and I'm not about to ask no customer to roll over so I can punch some goddamn clock. Now, this is your place, but I am in charge of the girls. And you just kiss my ass.
Oh, Betty, please.
Stop it, sugar. Stop doing it. Don't do that.
So, baby, how are we doing that?
We made about 200.
200? Your girls been back there all night. How they only make $200?
You kiss my ass quick. I don't never say nothing to you when the crap table and the bar come up short.
Because the bar and the crap table never come up short, just the girls.
Now, calm down, Vera.
Kiss my ass, sugar. I want to know what it is Quick is trying to say.
I ain't trying to say shit. You in charge of the girls, right?
I am in charge of the girls.
Are you in charge of the girls?
I am in charge of the girls.
Okay, the girls are always coming up short, all right? Let's get the shit out in the open. The girls are always coming up short. Even when the place is packed, the girls come up short. Now, either you or them got a problem with their arithmetic.
Are you saying I'm stealing?
The man didn't say you were stealing, Vera. Now, come on over here and sit down and shut the fuck up.
You shut the fuck up, Benny. I would tell you to kiss my ass, too, but you probably can't find it, you blind motherfucker.
Fuck you, bitch.
You got to step out back.
Hey, it was just a misunderstanding.
Uh-uh. No, it ain't. It ain't no misunderstanding. Quick just accused me of stealing. And if you're going to take us for Quick in here, we can all be some fighting motherfuckers in here this evening. Bring your ass, nigga. Bring it on. Come on. Bring your ass. Come on, get up and come on, motherfucker.
I want to see Quick getting
in the
old bitch ass.
I
want to
see this, too.
Come on, Quick. Don't see this. All right, bitch, you want to fight? We can fight then. You fat motherfucker, I'm tired of your shit.
Just bring your
I'm
ass.
I'm going to beat the shit out of your ass. And you, oh, Jesus. No, don't hold me, sugar. No, let me go, sugar. Let me go.
I'm just scared of
him.
Watch your ass.
No, sugar, don't hold me. Don't hold me.
You better watch it, Quick. You fucking with a heavyweight.
Come on. Come on.
Oh. up. Come on, Vera. Don't you want to talk about that?
I ain't got nothing to say. You done insulted me, and I got to kick your ass right now. And afterwards, I don't want no hard feelings either.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Ain't nothing wrong with me. What the fuck is wrong with you? You done accused me of stealing. The only thing I'm stealing out here today is your face.
You out of your fucking mind?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Come on, sucker. Let's get it on.
Oh, you want to fight? You want to fight? Well, then come on, goddammit. You've been fucking me since. I'm going to beat the shit out of your old ass in this motherfucker, too. Yeah. You have to punch people in their eyes, right? Right?
Bitch! That's all you got?
Yeah, you didn't think it was going to be like that, right? And now I'm going to blast your motherfucking teeth out.
Nigga, you hit like a bitch.
Oh, you're a little slow, then you saw it, ain't you, huh? Yeah, I punch like a bitch, huh? Okay, I punch like a bitch? You'll take a knife to this bitch right now.
You're going to have to learn to respect me. And the next time you accuse me of stealing, I'm gonna kick your ass again.
You crazy bitch!
Oh, you want to hit people with garbage cans. Now I got to cut you.
Vera, put that razor away. I ain't playing no more. You put that fucking razor away, I'm going to blow your goddamn pinky toe off.
Oh, now you're going to shoot me in my pinky toe.
I'm not playing with you. I will blow that little black, gnarled, crusty, dead motherfucker the fuck off your foot. Now put the razor away.
You must be crazy to pull your gun on me.
You're going to be the nine-toe-havenest, limpinest bitch in Harlem. You don't stop fucking with me. Now put the razor away.
Well, go ahead. Shoot, here it is. There it is. Shoot, quick, go ahead. Take your best shot.
You didn't have to shoot that old lady in the foot, man.
Sugar, she was trying to kill me.
She wasn't trying to kill you. She was just trying to scare you.
That's bullshit. The bitch pulled a razor out and was going to cut me with it. I usually kill somebody over some shit like that. I don't even want to talk about it no more.
You whipped your ass.
Fuck you, man.
And if you hadn't had that gun, she'd still be whipping your ass.
You know, y'all laugh at the wrong shit.
Shut me in my pinky toe.
I know, man.
I'm going to put what's left of my foot in your ass. I'm going to kill him, sugar.
Please, be careful.
I'm
going to
kill him.
Don't kill him. Just relax.
Oh, if I could get up from here.
Vera, we're going to find your toe.
Oh, I'm going to kill you.
You got to stop overreacting.
Overreacting?
Yes. Then get your old ass in the car.
Oh, man, fuck you. Next time you fight somebody, pick on somebody your own size. Get in there.
Pick on someone your own size, indeed. Well, I'm going to go look for a toe. Good night.